On this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we will examine how President Obama and the presidential candidates are responding to the Orlando mass shooting, as well as the policies that are being debated on the campaign trail, as well as the U.S. Senate chambers. Talk about the filibuster over gun control bills coming up as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, June 16th. So how do you rate how the presidential candidates are responding to the Orlando mass shooting? What policy changes, if any, would you like to see? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Jaime Regalado, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at California State University, Los Angeles. Good morning, and thank you very much for getting up extra early for us.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure.
So in broad strokes, what do you see emerging from on the campaign trail after the Orlando shooting?
Well, this has become kind of the defining issue of the campaign now and going forward over the next at least month or two. I think the candidates were getting set to do the usual ad hominem kind of attacks on each other, destroying as best they could the credibility of one another before this happened. And, of course, this just kind of magnifies that, but also focuses the campaign strategies on this mass mayhem of Orlando, really focused and intertwining issues of race and ethnicity and the LGBT community, immigration, terrorism. So they're all kind of intertwined in this kind of defining issue as we move forward in the campaign.
Yeah. How and again, in broad strokes, how would you define the key contrasts between the candidates' responses to the shooting?
Well, it's huge. On the one hand, this plays right into Trump's hands, that he can make the U.S. safer. The U.S. is not safe now. You have to close the borders to Muslims, to people coming from countries where they have a high degree of bloodshed and according to him, exporting hate. That comes into the United States in the form of immigration. So it really it plays very well into the kind of campaign that he's run, basically stroking fear.
Yeah, and historically, voters have favored Republicans to deal with terrorism threats. Are we likely to see the same reaction pattern in the wake of Orlando?
We are, except that many Republicans are kind of fearful of the kind of words and kind of strategy that Trump is playing. But historically, you're right. Republicans, conservative Republicans especially, have been known for their public safety, tough stance on crime, whether it's domestic or international that involves in some way the U.S., and what they've done is try to beat the Democrats by saying the Democrats are soft on such approaches. And so, of course, Trump is doing that. His words are kind of outlandish. They're harsher than we're used to in presidential campaigning. But basically, that's what it is, that history of a focus on public safety, national safety, national security, versus what they've done, been able to do successfully in targeting the Democrats as being soft on those issues, which is unfair, but nevertheless, it's been a reality of the campaign stump.
Latinos are a key group in this election and have already been targets of anti-immigration rhetoric. Then comes Orlando, and the majority of the victims were Latino. Is this event likely to further influence Latinos' views of the candidates in the upcoming election?
Well, Latinos pretty much have drawn a contrast already, preceding Orlando, about which candidate that they're going to select, whether they vote or whether they're simply active or simply wish one or the other is going to become president. And it's not a pro-Trump group. And surely now it's even going to be less than that, with the kind of remarks, inflammatory remarks he's made about, especially about immigration, building the wall higher, closing the border off not only to Mexicans and other Latinos, but on religious grounds to Muslims and others. So on the other hand, Latinos have strongly supported the Clintons, first Bill Clinton, and now Hillary, even though Bernie was really giving her a run for her money, especially among young Latinos and youth everywhere. But this kind of solidifies, I think, and it still has to play out a bit, but Latinos support, for the more recent, what they consider to be the more recent candidate, and the candidate they're familiar with. They're familiar with Trump only because of the kind of bombastic the campaign that he's run and the high visibility of his immigration stance, which most Latinos loathe.
Let me ask you too, though, about while the electorate might traditionally favor Republicans during times of terrorist threats, what about Republicans, including House Speaker Paul Ryan, criticizing the Republican presumptive presidential nominee over his policies and his rhetoric? For example, yesterday Paul Ryan said, we cannot ban people based on their religion from coming into this country. And, saying that this is just unrealistic and racist. Is that going to affect the electorate?
It is. When you have a divided House, and it appears to be the Republicans have a divided House, even though the presumptive candidate is Trump. But that doesn't mean all are on board. And, of course, it took Ryan some time before he endorsed Trump's candidacy, but he's coming to regret part of that, as are many other Republicans kind of holding their noses. But also they're worried about what that's going to mean over the next 5 months as kind of a hate-filled campaign by Trump, or at least that's the appearance, is going to embroil other Republicans down the ticket. And so there's a real concern, I think, of Ryan and other Republican leaders, even though most of them have been mute on this, that the front runner has to be watched, has to be corralled. But guess what? We don't think that Trump is corrallable, and that's a real concern for Ryan and others.
We are talking with Jaime Regalado. He is a professor emeritus of political science at California State University, Los Angeles. And we are welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your reactions to how the issues raised by the Orlando mass shooting are playing out on the campaign trail. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me first play a clip from Hillary Clinton and what she had to say following the Orlando shootings.
Inflammatory anti-Muslim rhetoric and threatening to ban the families and friends of Muslim Americans, as well as millions of Muslim business people and tourists from entering our country, hurts the vast majority of Muslims who love freedom and hate terror. Even as we make sure our security officials get the tools they need to prevent attacks, it's essential that we stop terrorists from getting the tools they need to carry out the attacks. And that is especially true when it comes to assault weapons like those used in Orlando and San Bernardino.
So talk some about how this has renewed the gun law debate.
Well, it's been tough over the years, whether it's in the wake of Sandy Hook or San Bernardino, closer to where I live, or more recently, Orlando. There always has been attempts to toughen, tighten, expand gun control laws in the wake of these disasters. But nothing fundamental has really happened, and largely because it's been held up, let's say, by legislators, primarily in the House. but also at local and state levels, it's also largely been held up, even though they've done somewhat of a better job, depending on the locality or state, at having some gun control laws beyond what the federal government does. So I think it's one of the campaign planks that Hillary has been running on even more forcefully now, that we need a dramatic change in the laws to safeguard Americans from these kind of assault weapons, which are so easy to get, and the magazine clips that perhaps go with them. But at the same time, her job was and still is to define Trump as an unpredictable loose cannon who wants to be caudillo, wants to be el gran jefe, in a sense, who knows, who just on his own knows the way to create not only a great America once again. I'm not sure what period he's talking about, the 50s or before.
Yeah, I'm going to have to jump in because we have news coming up next, and then we'll continue talking about these issues on the campaign trail after the news. On this issue of On the Campaign Trail, we are discussing how the presidential candidates and President Obama are responding to the Orlando mass shooting, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions about the politics and the policy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Certainly, the gun law debate has been renewed since Orlando. So has candidate Trump's call to ban Muslims, at least temporarily, from entering the country, and much more. We had a debate over whether President Obama should use the term radical Islam when describing this terrorist threat, and there were both President Obama and Donald Trump had an exchange over that. We will talk about all of these issues, and to welcome the issue you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Jaime Regalado, a professor emeritus of political science at California State University, Los Angeles. We just talked about Hillary Clinton's response to the Orlando shooting, and I had to interrupt you before you were finished, Professor Regalado. So, you do not see much movement when it comes to the gun law debate following Orlando?
It's hard to imagine that, given what we've been through as a nation with so many of these mass killings, perhaps none as deadly in numbers as Orlando, but still, the nation has become kind of immune to them in a sense, horror, hoping things change, but realizing that things are really not changing in the form of a tighter control of guns and who has access to guns. That play a leading role in these killings. So it's hard to feel optimistic based on where we haven't been, what we haven't done over the last 5 to 10 to 15 years. But it doesn't mean that the filibuster of sorts that was taking place in the state Senate will go unheard. There may be something that comes out of that. Who knows? If you're a betting person, chances are that a good read would be, or a positive read would be, even money, that something will come out of that. But I'm not holding my breath. But I think it's Hillary's job to define Trump, and she has been doing it. But again, this issue bleeds right into his strength as somebody that who's a loose cannon. He's unpredictable. We can't have somebody like that in the White House, unless the person's only visiting the White House, but not as commander-in-chief and not as the number one, not as the grand jefe, as I mentioned. Well, her job for herself is to try to define what she has been and what she's going to be as the practical, the realistic, the calm, the pulling-together person, not the divisive person that Trump would be, according to Clinton, if he is elected president. So there's a real job of trying to define each one of these, even more so now that Orlando has taken place. It was going on before. It's really, really raising its head in terms of trying to define each other as we go forward.
So what do we make of the Democrats in the U.S. Senate doing this filibuster until early this morning? Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, and fellow Senate Democrats, including Wisconsin U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, officially relinquished the floor early this morning after spending nearly 15 straight hours talking about gun control. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that they were pushing for specifically was that there should be a no-buy list, that if you're on a terror watch list or a no-fly list, you should not be able to buy a gun. It looks as though that they might have made some progress with Republicans on that issue. What do you think?
It would be hoped for that that something could come out of that that's positive. It's one of the few tactics that Democrats have in either chamber, them being minorities in both chambers. But the filibuster does exist in the Senate, and it seems like they're using it to good effect. 15 hours is a long time. It's not 24 hours. It's not 48 hours. But it does hold up other things, including appropriations bills and others. So if something comes out of this, we can be hopeful that it'll be something that does have an effect on limiting who can purchase these guns of mass destruction, and elongate the waiting list and the time for surveillance, the time for looking into more specifically the background of others who want to purchase these weapons. So time will be the test here. But again, Democrats in either house, either chamber, have very few tactics, but the filibuster is one of them, and it seems like it's being used for at least potentially progressive ends here.
1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Still have a lot of issues to discuss that are being debated on the campaign trail, but we have a number of callers who want to talk about the gun issue, so let's go to those now. Mike in Seneca is with us. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Go ahead, Mike.
My point is, and I'm up for reasonable solutions, but it seems to me that there's been very little talk about this man's background as a security guard. So whatever clearances, whatever background checks he went through to obtain that did nothing to prevent him from then obtaining guns that would lead to this. In other words, if we make stricter laws that still don't deal with individuals like this, we've gained nothing.
Professor Regalado?
Well, it's hard. It's hard. I don't think any law is going to 100% prevent people from gaining access to guns. It's difficult, even if they pass gun restriction laws, more specifically at local or state levels. It's fairly easy, if not really, to transport them across state lines, as we've seen. So it's going to be very difficult. So I think you try to aim, and what the Senate Democrats are trying to do is trying to aim at the larger magazines, the larger weapons of destruction, the repeat action weapons. And again, you know, thoroughly ridding the country of the threats of an individual or individual access is going to be very, very difficult. It's an issue of our time and a very complex and difficult one to control.
Jill in Rhinelander is with us. Hello, Jill.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment. I don't know why our politicians, congressmen, whomever, don't get a backbone and brush away the gun that the NRA has held to their heads that's loaded with money, not bullets, and just dump this in the lap of the NRA and say, you come up with a solution so people don't go through this anymore. That's my comment.
I guess why don't our lawmakers stand up to the NRA, or why doesn't the NRA come up with a solution?
I think a couple of reasons. One is that as long as money speaks as loudly as it does in American, the history of American political campaigns, especially the presidential campaign, and much of that money is going to one party and the ideology that that is most dominant in it, it's going to be difficult to say no to the NRA and other strong gun lobbies or business lobbies, let's say. So I think the part of the problem, or if not, you know, much of the problem, is the advantages money has bought, and the people money has bought in the state, but also in the national legislature. It's you know, for me, it's almost criminal that this has been taking place for so long, and that it's been so difficult to trying to clean up these messes and prevent messes like this, or massacres, I should say. But again, it comes back to political will, and largely the will is not there when there's a lot of money on the table.
So though senators said that they had yet to formally strike a deal, the Senate was likely to vote on two Democratic-backed gun measures, a proposal from Senator Dianne Feinstein meant to bar those on federal terror watch lists from obtaining firearms, and a bill from Chris Murphy and Cory Booker and Chuck Schumer mandating background checks for sales of at gun shows and over the Internet. The Republicans, I guess, are saying that they will take up votes on these issues, but they would put forward two of their own proposals on the issues, but along those lines. So that is progress, Professor Regalado.
It looks like progress. Let's see where it goes. Let's see what the final votes are. Then let's see if the House has an answer to that as well. But the focus is on those who have said no in the past right now. And so if some of those no's can be changed to yes or abstain, then I think we're a lot much more likely to see progress on this. So the fact that there's some movement is a good.
Let me move on to another issue, as there have been many discussed on the campaign trail this week. We'll talk a little bit more about the debate between Donald Trump and President Obama over whether or not President Obama should be using the term radical Islam when he's talking about the terrorist threat. Let's take a listen to what President Obama had to say about this.
For a while now, the main contribution of some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have made in the fight against ISIL is to criticize this administration and me for not using the phrase radical Islam. So there's no magic to the phrase radical Islam. It's a political talking point. It's not a strategy. And if we fall into the trap of painting all Muslims with a broad brush and imply that we are at war with an entire religion, then we are doing the terrorist work for them.
So, Professor Regalado, how unusual is it for a sitting president to be addressing and criticizing a presidential candidate like this?
It's unusual, but this is kind of an unusual campaign season. Typically, presidents, sitting presidents, sit out the campaign as much as they can, as best they can. But I think there's been a special relationship, a negative relationship that has developed over the years between Trump and Obama on a lot of different things. But now that Trump is a very serious threat to what Obama has stood for in terms of being the commander-in-chief and guarding the security of the United States, his record is under assault by Trump virtually at every turn. So I think the president felt inclined early on to, once the Democrats had their final standing nominee, to become involved and to help whoever that was, and kind of a pincers movement on Trump. But again, it breaks with a lot of tradition. Usually sitting presidents do not involve themselves, especially to the degree that Obama has. But again, I think he feels his legacy is under assault here as well.
Yeah, well, Camille on Facebook says, President Obama is unfit to be president if he can't say radical Islam is a threat to the U.S. How can we defend ourselves if we can't define our enemy? Talk some about this this whole controversy over whether the Republicans want Obama to say radical Islam when he's describing this threat, and he's saying that's not a strategy, that's a talking point.
Well, they're playing on Trump's turf right now when they get into a semantics game like this, how you define the threat. And, you know, part of what Obama is doing is not wanting to play the game, not wanting to use the words radical Islam, in part because they're Trump's word, they're Trump's definition. But the other thing that he said is that it's a divisive term or tag to put on Muslims. At the same time, Hillary Clinton has started using that, or at least once or twice. So it's going to be a focus of Trump. It's going to be a divisive focus on how you identify the enemy, how you identify those who want to hurt us in Trump's world and Trump's language. So I guess Clinton's strategists have gotten part of the message that they need to at least use the term, if not try to co-own it.
Let's take a listen to Donald Trump responding to President Obama.
Once again, we've seen that political correctness is deadly. They don't want to talk about the problem. And I watched President Obama today, and he was more angry at me than he was at the shooter. The level of anger, that's the kind of anger he should have for the shooter and these killers that shouldn't be here.
So what did Trump make some points with that?
Well, Trump is great at what he does. There's no question about this is in Trump's lap. And that means that the issue, as horrific as it is, it fit real neatly into how he wanted to campaign. Not that he wished for such a catastrophe as Orlando or Orlando's of the future or the past, but it plays right into his lap and allows him to heap and reap even more criticism on the sitting president, whose policies he argues Clinton is going to service and further. I think he has mentioned that if you elect Clinton, if you elect Hillary, you get more of Obama's agenda. And so it's easy for him to take issue with both Hillary and Obama at kind of one sitting. But again, the playing field for an issue like this and for defining the terms of the issue are in Trump's lap. It's kind of tailor-made for him.
Yeah, so we had Hillary Clinton and President Obama saying, by saying radical Islam, we're playing into the terrorist hands. That's going to be helping in recruiting and showing that there's some sort of war between the West and the Muslim religion, and that we know who our enemy is, according to Obama and Clinton. Ask Osama bin Laden if we know who our enemy is.
Mm-hmm. True, and part of that again is to make. To make Trump look foolish, to make him look reckless, to define him as the loose cannon, and as part of that, being divisive with his language, they're going to continue to try to paint him as this person who is not going to make America safe if he's elected. To the contrary, that he's going to undo much of the safety net worldwide that not only President Obama, but his predecessors have helped put together over the years. And so it's really about definition here. Who can define whom the best as over the next 5 months as being the stronger of the two to lead this country through this very, very difficult period on a global stage, but also internally to keep America as safe as you can from these kind of threats.
During this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are talking about the issues that are being discussed and debated following the mass shooting in Orlando, and we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your views on the change in gun laws, on the debate over the term radical Islam. talking about the temporary ban on Muslims that Donald Trump is proposing. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Jaime Regalado. He is a professor emeritus of political science at California State University, Los Angeles. And we are talking about the policies and politics on the campaign trail following the mass shooting in Orlando. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions on the various politics and policies that are being debated, from gun control to terrorism, to the LGBT community. We haven't talked a whole lot about issues affecting the LGBT community. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Valerie in Duluth, Minnesota is with us. Hi, Valerie.
Well, hello there. Thank you for taking my call. I am just curious. I know the big talking point has been about radical Islam, but I'm really curious to know about Trump's reaction and why there isn't more focus on the gay and queer community that was, you know, also the target, you know, of this mass shooting. And I can take my answer off the air.
Yeah. Professor Regalado?
Well, Trump has played it both ways. His primary purpose here is to really focus on the existential, but also the what he considers to be the real threat of Islam, what he terms radical Islam, to the U.S., and only secondarily on who the martyrs were, so to speak, who was injured, who was killed in this Orlando shooting. But at the same time, he goes out of his way to talk about and to maintain that he's been a friend of the LGBT community for years. And he indicated that he shares in the suffering of the community and their families. And, of course, Clinton has done much the same. But you're right. The focus really hasn't been on nearly as much on the victims and the background of the victims. And but it's hard not to feel that this was an assault, not simply on the United States in general or a specific city, but but was targeted to a specific group. It's hard not to come away with that conclusion and to look further into that. What the hell is going on here? So I agree with you that there has been not enough press about such targeting going on, and is it likely to see this play out in the future as well?
I'm going to make a big generalization here, but it seems in the coverage, at least what I've been seeing, is, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you have a different perspective, that it seems more of the Democrats are talking about how this is the hate crime aspects of this,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
the Republicans are talking more about, no, this is terrorism, pure and simple.
Right. Republicans have been much slower in the draw of identifying who the audience has been. For some reason, they've just been very slow on the draw to describe this as a hate crime, as a targeted audience. The LGBT community has suffered enormously from this and will for years. Well, the Democrats have been up front in terms of defining not only the issue and how the issue needs to be taken away from the definition of how Trump is defining it, but also look at who the target was, what the target was, and try to come to grips with some solution here, some understanding of it. So, yeah, you have different postures, different political angles, and silence from one and more specific kind of addressing it on the other side.
Yeah, you know, I also saw Democrats criticizing Republicans, and again, this is in general, but Democrats criticizing Republicans when Republicans offered thoughts and prayers, saying we need more than thoughts and prayers, and how dare you offer thoughts and prayers or put a rainbow flag on your profile picture, because look at all the policies that you've passed that have been against the LGBT community. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's appropriate in a sense where there's been silence or a turning of heads away from a community that has been under assault in many forms, never quite this deadly though. That I think it's appropriate, you know, to define that and to indicate that the other side, Republicans perhaps in this case, in the majority, are simply not looking accurately or defining accurately what happened, why it's happening, and who the target is. What can we do to address it? And so I think it's fair. I think it's a fair criticism. Republicans have been silent in the face of the criticism for the most part, although more belatedly, Ryan and others have indicated that this, you know, borders a hate crime. And it looks like it really was targeting, and we should be more upfront with it. But those voices are few and far between on the Republican side.
Interesting. I didn't mean to... I didn't mean to take our next caller or steal your thunder, Jacqueline, in Milwaukee, but go ahead.
Hi. My point is I'd like to say I don't want to hear the politicians' thoughts and prayers. You can't stand on the floor of the House and read Bible verses that call for death to gays. You can't compare me to a pedophile. You can't say I'm a threat to women and children in the bathroom. You can't pass 260 anti-gay laws in the last 6 months and then give me your thoughts and prayers. I don't want your thoughts and prayers. I want you to do your job for all of us, and that includes us gay people.
Yeah. What do you want to see now, Jacqueline, in terms of policies following Orlando?
Well, number one, I'd like to see a national hate crime bill. And I'd like to see ENDA, which is Employment Non-Discrimination, a National Non-Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Those would be two really nice things if they could get off the ball and do something about.
So, Professor Regalado?
Well, yeah, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Words can be cheap in a political atmosphere, and words have been cheap. The prayers, the condolences, and the wishes for a better America on the one hand versus the deeds that aren't coming will back that up. Do something for us. Let's see policy advocates on these issues that you're describing. They've been in very short supply. They simply aren't coming from one side of the aisle, and that side of the aisle controls the House. And for many of these issues, many of these policies to get done and sent to the desk of the president, you need both houses in exactly the same language to pass that that bill. Very difficult. This, in part, this is what Republicans are fearing, a loss of control of either chamber or both chambers, and especially given who their presumptive candidate is at the top. They feel perhaps he's going to do enough damage to loosen the control and or change control back to Dems. Then it'll be on the Dems if that happens. I don't think it's going to happen in the House, but if it does, and the Senate reverts back to the Dems, then it's going to be on the Dems to pass something like this. Huge measures.
Let's go next to Veronica in Janesville. Hello, Veronica.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question or comment regards why is this considered an act of terrorism? This man was a U.S.-born citizen and has lived here his whole life. But when the young man who was white walked into a church of black churchgoers and killed them, that was not considered an act of terrorism. That was a hate crime or whatever it was. Such as, you know, and Anderson Cooper seems to be the only one in the media that's addressing the fact that, you know, why is this being called terrorism? It's a hate crime.
Well, I'll get our guest to respond, but President Obama said act of terror and act of hate. But Professor Regalado?
I think they're intertwined here. Domestic terrorism is kind of the apropos word here, words, that it's terrorism. But domestic bred in both cases. There was a target of both. one African-American community, the other LGBT community, hard to miss calling them hate crimes as well. So I think Obama did the correct thing in terms of calling them out as both hate crimes but also cases of domestic terrorism.
Yeah. Tim emails, more guns would have helped if the people had fought back rather than laid down like sitting ducks. There certainly wouldn't have been as many deaths in this tragedy. Well, there's the other, in terms of changing gun laws, gun rights people say there should be no gun-free zones and that more people should be carrying concealed weapons. Do you see that changing in terms of policy, Professor Regalado?
Oh, that's hard to see that changing in a positive way. One argument on one side is to put more guns out there, and that would equal becoming safer. It's hard to imagine that. It really is hard to imagine that it's going to make us safer. But at the same time, people are feeling increasingly vulnerable. With acts like this, how do we protect ourselves? Looking for government to simply protect us in a world that is far different from it was 10 or 15 or 20, 25, 35 years ago, in my memory anyway, and this is kind of a general thing, is very difficult to imagine now. So what is going to protect us? Will more guns on the streets, will more guns in the schools, will more guns in theaters and in restaurants make us safer? I personally don't think so, but that is an argument that we're hearing.
Yeah. So this tragedy certainly did turn political very quickly. What do you say to people who feel that discussing Orlando in terms of a politics in the presidential election is insensitive or worse?
Well, it has to be discussed. It's too bad it's become so politicized, though, in this hate-filled campaign. It's going to be, very divisive, until it ends in 5 months, and then we'll see where it goes. But it's very hard to put national priorities in order and policies to get there, whether it's jobs or economic growth, income inequality, local public safety, the building or the rebuilding of infrastructure, homelessness, other points of foreign policy in this global society that we live in, outside of terrorism, get pushed to the back burner. And so, but this is the defining issue of the moment, and we'll see what kind of legs it does have and what it brings forth in terms of progressive and or positive policy outcomes. Not holding my breath based on our record, again, over the last 5 to 10 years on this issue of gun control, but let's see where it goes.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jaime Regalado is a professor emeritus of political science at California State University, Los Angeles. Thank you to producers Marika Suval, Nyasia Ellison, and Elizabeth Delaquez. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.